Hi, I'm Pooja Dishabarwani, founder and chief storyteller at What's the Story, a boutique branding and communications consultancy based in Singapore. I love hearing, telling, and writing stories for individuals and businesses.
Hi guys, my name is Kevin McSpadden. I'm the editor for E27. In this podcast, we're going to work to bring you stories from successful individuals in Asia in a dynamic, engaging, and thought-provoking way. Our aim is to entertain and educate the Asian listener by giving them some insight into unique tools in the world of business, productivity, self-improvement, wellness, technology, work-life integration, and we want to understand how they use their story to position themselves and tell their business narrative.
This podcast is called The Story of You, and on The Story of You, we want to offer a human and real conversation on how people succeed and overcome difficulties in the 21st century. Technology has changed the way we work and the ability for us to do things. But life still has many challenges. The business world is harshly competitive and people seem more hungry than ever for answers and guidance in the midst of all this change. In this podcast, we will bring out different and great conversations. I'm a big believer in crafting and asking the right questions to get the right response. The first episode is about the future of work. We're going to look at this gorgeously designed members club and co-working space in Singapore called 1880. We're going to chat with the club's co-founder Luke Jones to understand what went into the conceptualizing and making of this unique space, where work, play, and wellness coexist effortlessly. You can come from a meeting in the conference room to a yoga class in the studio and finish the day with an old-fashioned at the bar. It's all in the day's work in 2018. Have we actually entered an era where the lines between our personal and professional worlds have blurred and integrated? And how does this actually affect work, life, and productivity?
And today we're starting with the future of work with Luke Jones.
Hi, it's Luke Jones here. I'm one of the owners of 1880, and I'm very excited about how we can contribute to this conversation of how life and work are converging in a way that we've not seen before.
And let's just start off with the softball. Let's introduce yourself, 1880, a little bit about the space. I'll just have to say this is a very, very nice space. It's like a walk-in, and I was like, whoa, kind of area.
Good. That's the kind of reaction we were hoping to garner from people. When we identified the pillars of really how we want to focus our time and attention in the preparation, design was one of those areas that we really wanted to consider ourselves sort of best in class and world class in. So, you know, we've looked at many clubs across the world, and you know, there are a couple of hero models for us from a design perspective. And you know, we all love Shoreditch House in London. We love the Battery in San Francisco, and you know, they were pinnacles for us of how to use space to blow people's minds away, but also to create a sense of pride as well in your club. And I hope that that's something that we've been able to engender within our membership in the first month of our existence. So you're right, design is definitely one of those elements that we really wanted to focus on, and I think we've done a reasonable job to date.
And a lot of our listeners work in our various co-working spaces. E27 is actually in a co-working space. This is a co-working space mixed with a club, mixed with the yoga options. It's more of a lifestyle, which is actually what I wanted to get into, which is you've built your brand on being a lifestyle brand. Maybe that's presumptuous, but for startups, one of their hardest parts is building a brand. It's more than just building a logo and throwing a product up there and calling it your brand. How do you build a brand? Because actually, off the top of my head, I know what 1880 is. I know it's a nice lifestyle club, but I actually have a hard time picturing your brand, which means your lifestyle has almost overcome the actual logo. Maybe first, let's start with how you decided to pick the brand and what you were going for, and then we can get into some maybe actionable advice.
Yeah, I think it comes down to the why have we created what we've tried to create? And if you backtrack in history, this all starts from Mark's parents. So Mark is my co-founder here. He's a Canadian boy, and in 1982 in Montreal, his parents established a Wednesday night salon, and it's a fascinating group of people who came together from business, from government, from the charity sector, from education, from entrepreneurs. And Mark, as a 13-year-old, sat in at that very first Wednesday night salon, and just saw what happens when you bring interesting people together to inspire conversations. So businesses have been created, hospitals have been built, schools have been created, NGOs have developed, patents have been trademarked, all from the creation of the opportunity for interesting, like-minded people come together. Now, his parents have now run that Wednesday night salon for 1,866 consecutive Wednesdays. So it's very much in Mark's DNA to bring people together to inspire conversations. And that's exactly what 1880 is all about. That's the DNA of who we are and what we're trying to do. And so, yeah, the physical space is an important part of that. But so is the F&B element, and so is the opportunity to curate a fascinating membership. And I guess building on to that is the programming as well. So those are the elements that we've really tried to introduce into the brand. But I guess we understand what we're trying to do and why we're trying to do it, and so it's all about inspiring conversations.
Maybe you can dive a little bit into the programming as something that you've done to help solidify what you're doing.
So the big push this month is around health and wellness. So there's a
after holidays.
Yeah,
before Chinese New Year.
So there's a bit of a guilt trip. I went to the boot camp on Saturday morning. It was 7:30, and for those of you in Singapore on Saturday morning, it was horrible and rainy. And my expectations were there'd be nobody there. But there were 10 of us there doing boot camp in Fort Canning, and there were 4 members in that group of 10 people who I'd not met before. But when you're creating programs around topics and themes where people are brought together because of their love for fitness or because of their love for wine, it helps people start conversations in a way which is more natural than sort of social engineering and sort of networking meetings. So there's two things. One is obviously that, you know, there are certain things that we think are important, and health and wellness is definitely one of those. Obviously, enjoyment is one too. So we have a wonderful wine and cheese night on Wednesday. But the salon topic that or the salon conversations that Mark's parents created, yeah, back in 1982, you know, we launched our first salon last month, and it was around entrepreneurship in North Korea.
Wow.
So we're trying to create some thought leadership around topics and around areas where, and the format is very, very different to most meetings. It's not people sitting at the front talking about who they are and what they've done in their life, and then 10 minutes of questions at the end. It's a very, very immersive experience. It's round table, Mark chaired it, and it's very, very collaborative throughout the whole meeting. So you can't hide at the back and play on your phone, because, you know, at any one time you could be picked up for a comment, and David, what's your view on, you know, Kim Jong-un and what may or may not happen to the Australian stock market? It's a really interesting way of deeply speaking about conversations that frequently we don't have.
On day one, what did you do in terms of, again, on the brand building topic before? I'm not going to let the North Korea thing go, but we can get back to that in 5 minutes. So on the brand building, day one, what did you do?
I knew the space would look wonderful, and I knew we had a fantastic chef, and with the partnership we have with Proof & Co, I knew that we'd have a very, very strong beverage program. So it really comes down to the quality of the community. And so for us, you know, identifying those change makers across Singaporean society, those people who shared our values, those people who, when we talked to them about the concept of 1880, their eyes lit up and they said, wow, how can I help you? How can I be part of this community? That was for me, that was the most exciting thing. When I think back to our founders' party and the quality of the people who were there and the interactions that were started, and really the crowd was outstanding. So I think we've built our brand on our community, and I think that trying to make sure that we continue to curate the right people is critical to our success.
Going back to North Korea, because this just came out over the weekend as well, this trip that you're planning, 1880 is organizing an entrepreneurship boot camp to impart business skills to ambitious and creative North Koreans. I mean, that sentence itself is so loaded. And it's really interesting that you're doing this. What is the objective of this, and you know, how did this all come about?
Well, coming back to our community, the organization we're working with, Chosen, is I think are doing some remarkable things in North Korea, and we love the people behind us, and they've been hugely supportive of 1880. And I think there's a sort of a misperception of what Korea is and what it represents, and I think the reality of meeting humans who are real people and have real jobs and real families is an important thing in sort of trying to reduce stigmas. Talk about some other members who've produced movies in refugee camps in Syria, for example. And again, it's that humanization and actually understanding there are real people there whose lives have been displaced, or in North Korea who are trying to start businesses and trying to start families and trying to lead a normal life. And I think it's dangerous just to focus on one person and stereotype a whole nation based on one person, his behavior. So I think within the club we have a lot of entrepreneurs. I know within the club we have a lot of entrepreneurs. We have people who have inquisitive minds, and we have people within the club who want to make the world a better place. And I think that all three elements of those come together in the North Korean trip. So it is a bit unusual, and it's a little bit niche, but I think anything we can do to, you know, impact the world in a positive way is really what the, you know, what the club's all about.
So this whole thing about, you know, you said you got inspiration from other clubs around the world, but again, Asia and the way we do business here, it's different. Yes, Singapore is very cosmopolitan, modern. You have a very international range of companies. But at the same time, do you find that contextualizing it in a co-working space, such an open space in an Asian context, is that any different? Because people are a bit more, they don't want to be in your face so much, and they're more private, I would say.
No, I think that's a very fair observation. We in the first co-working space, we worked out of three different co-working spaces as market research before we created our own. And the first space we worked at, it was very, very open plan. And it was wonderful at creating a community. And I met some great friends through it because of the nature of it being so open planned. But actually, what I've noticed from our tenants is they're a little bit more mature than the tenants in the first co-working space that we worked out of. And their need for privacy is a little bit more enhanced. Partly, I think, as you say, from a cultural perspective, because you know, there's a... the norms of an office or a co-working environment in Singapore are perhaps two or three years behind what it may be in New York, for example. But also, I guess, in the number of the tenants that we've attracted into our co-working space, they're family offices or sort of early stage angel investors and a bit of VC. And there is a need for some kind of privacy there. So one of the things that I think we're looking at doing is actually building out a little bit more office space into the co-working area. As you pointed out, it's very, very open plan today. Perhaps we erred on the side of being too open plan. I think in the next month or so we'll build out a couple more offices because it's a demand driven position we're in now. So yes, I think I took a little bit too much inspiration from the first co-working space we worked out of, and perhaps also looking at Neuhaus, for example, in New York, and actually perhaps we need to your point, we need to contextualize a little bit more for Singapore.
What's your strategy for that one doesn't turn off the other? That the co-working spaces aren't scared off by the social club atmosphere, like maybe they find it elitist, for lack of a better word, or that the social club is worried about the thing you were speaking about before, is that it might bring in a group of immature companies and they will both kind of dilute each other.
Well, my skin crawled when you said the word elitist, because it's something that I consider myself and Mark and the rest of the founding team very, very down to earth, and I hope if you spend some time here you'll realize that from other members, and you'll realize from other members of staff that it is a very, very grounded place. To answer that question, the criteria of using the co-working space is you have to be a member of the club first. And I just think about myself, you know, I would join the club if I wasn't one of the owners. I would join the club because it's a wonderful, wonderful place. And I work out of a co-working space, so why wouldn't I combine the two? it's a very natural thing for me to you know, I can entertain my clients, I can have a haircut when it suits me, I can do my fitness when it's appropriate, but I need somewhere to work and I need some meeting rooms and I need to be able to print from time to time. So for me, it's a very, very natural extension or combination of parts of my life. And I think a lot of our members have seen the same thing too. They've been working out of co-working spaces here in Singapore for 2 or 3 years. They've joined the club and they've said, you know what, it just makes complete sense for me to reach out to.
One of the more interesting questions in general in the business world right now is the blurring separation between work and home, which some people wrap their arms around and some people are worried about. What are your general takes on that? That's kind of the criticism with Google, is they give you everything that you possibly ever could need at Google, so then you never go home and you're always working at Google. Back in the day, you go to work until, let's say, 6:30, take the train home, and it was done. You were with your family, and then you didn't turn on again until 9 a.m. the next morning.
No, well, I think trends have changed a lot, haven't they? I mean, that was exactly the working environment I had at Arthur Andersen in 1992, so I understand the point you're making. I think in some ways the sort of the movement from traditional corporate jobs to, you know, the gig economy is helping people have more choice. You know, who they work for, when they work, and how they work. And an increasing number of people have reached a stage in their careers and their lives where, you know, the importance of purpose and the importance of working in a wonderful environment with great people is a really high priority. And I'm fortunate enough to be in that position myself. So I think that there's an increasing number of people who have that choice of, yeah, I want to work in a beautiful environment and I want to have access to other services that suit me when it suits me. The facts stack up that we work, you know, longer and longer hours, sort of on a year-by-year basis. But the ability to you know, entertain a client when it suits me, or grab a haircut when it suits me, or go to a gym when it suits me, I want that control. I see more and more people want to have the flexibility of being able to lead their lives in that way. Whether it's 1880 that does it, or whether it's someone else that does it, I think increasingly people want to be able to have more control over their lives, and that means, you know, the ability to build in lifestyle and leisure activities into their daytime as it suits them.
Do you have any personal strategies that you implement in your life for turning off? Because it is important. I mean, granted, you're the owner, so the people running the show tend to lose that luxury sometimes. For your regular employee, right, turning off's important. Do you have any?
It is, and I've always done it through exercise and activity. Played professional rugby when I was younger, and so that was a good distraction. And I still enjoy exercise a lot. So whether that's cycling with the ANZA crew over the weekend or with some hospitality friends, that for me is a good way of sort of separating work from non-work. And well, that's running home. So I've always found exercise is a great way of cleansing the mind, and I find I'm way more productive after exercising than before.
So Luke himself is the embodiment of a digital nomad and the type of individual who is living in this very futuristic work environment. He lives in Sweden, works in Singapore, and is British. How does that work?
Yeah, it's not ideal. It's a long commute. I find myself in a situation where I'm not at 1880 as much as I should be, and that puts pressure on Mark in particular, and clearly I'm not as with the family as much as I should be either, so which has put huge pressure on my wife and to a lesser extent my daughter. But it's the only way, I guess as an entrepreneur sometimes you have to take risks, and this project is by far and away the most exciting thing I've ever done in my career, and it's 2 or 3 years of my life and sacrifice. And yes, there have been definite impacts on my family life, but I would also like to look back in 10, 15, 20 years' time and imagine my legacy. And I think what's going to... 1880 will create opportunities and businesses and fix some of the wrongs of the world. And I can attribute that to, you know, a small part that I played in setting up the very first 1880. So, yeah, there have been huge, huge, I guess, personal sacrifices to get to where we've got to. But hopefully within the next 6 months or so, there's the opportunity for my family to move to Asia, and at the same time for us to build out a stronger team here, which will become less reliant on me too. So I'm looking forward to a few less commutes from Sweden and or a move over here. That's what the future has in store.
What are your thoughts on the increasingly nomadic nature of younger workers, millennials, people younger than that? It's kind of a sexy idea, the digital nomad among my generation, and people are, you know, increasingly can do a lot of their job just from their laptop.
Yeah, I mean, it's a topic Mark and I talk about on a regular basis, not necessarily around sort of nomadic workers, but the importance of connections. And there's a wonderful study that's been running for 80 or 90 years in the States, which looks at, you know, what are the critical factors in people's health and happiness across their lives. And, you know, the three most important things are, you know, how strong your bonds are with, you know, with friends and family, the tightness and quality of interactions rather than the quantity of relationships, and having a stable marriage. And so I think although technology allows people to work more remotely, the need for people to have a tribe and a band and a community they belong to is I think in many ways more important now than ever before. I think to your point, more and more people are working remotely. And actually, we think that's a dangerous thing from a mental health perspective, and we also think from a happiness and health perspective, we are gregarious people. You know, we need our bands and our tribes and our communities, and I think that's, you know, we provide that physical space where like-minded people do have that opportunity to bump into someone in a bar and have a conversation. So yes, technology definitely allows people to be more remote. We work in bands.
About relationships. It's about relationships. I mean, the way you conversation, relationships, that will move things forward in the co-working space and in the club. We're going to do a quick rapid fire. You just pick one.
Maybe like a one sentence on logic if you're willing to delve a little bit deeper.
Logic.
Bitcoin or cash?
Okay, long-term Bitcoin.
Okay, why? Sorry, it's a big why one.
I think the banks are just so ripe for disruption, and I think that I live in Sweden. We are almost cashless already, so for me, it's a natural progression to move to the next level.
Trump or Kim?
Wow, where do you go with that one, Kim?
Please explain.
Well, only because in the last couple of days, in fact, he's reached out to South Korea and said, "Let's do some Olympics." There's some hope that there could be reconciliation on the Korean Peninsula.
And he didn't use the word shithole, so
we're allowed to. We're allowed to. This is your podcast. You can do whatever you want.
Twitter or Facebook?
Oh, Instagram.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Okay.
Apple or Microsoft?
That's a hard one, isn't it? Because I'm an accountant at heart, so I've been brought up in the Microsoft world, but I also recognise that from a branding perspective, from a lifestyle perspective, from a how we live our lives today perspective, that Apple is far more relevant.
Alexa or Google Home?
Pass.
You can say neither, right? So you don't want to be heard.
They're both equally creepy.
Yeah, they are. Design or space?
It's got to be both. You can't have design without space, and you can't have space without design. And the two have to work together. So you can have, the two have to be fully integrated, and that's why one of the things we've done here, I think, incredibly well, is bring a number of amazing partners together. So whether it's Space Matrix, our contractor, or Timothy Alton, our design partner, or Proof from a beverage perspective, the ability to bring great minds together in one space and coordinate design from a functional and a beauty perspective, it has to be both.
Okay. Spotify or iTunes?
iTunes.
YouTube or Netflix?
Netflix for me.
Game of Thrones or House of Cards?
It's Game of Thrones.
Thank you so much, Luke, for that very enriching conversation. We had a great time chatting with you in our first podcast in this, all I can say is, wow, living room. Talk about living room goals.
Yeah, we need pictures.
Yeah, this is, it's all leather, great woodwork, and, you know, we just, I think that itself opened up the conversation. So thank you, and we look forward to seeing more of you and 1880 as we go forward with this podcast.
Wonderful. Thank you for your time this morning. It's been wonderful to be part of your team. Thank you.